From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Open lines later this hour. Next hour, a group of experts and scholars have concluded that senior government officials have covered up crucial facts about what really happened on 9/11. A special report on that coming up as well. In Phoenix, at this moment, a man pulled a gun during a legal proceeding Thursday and took as many as 9 people hostage in an office in a central Phoenix high-rise. One female captive later escaped. Police Sergeant Andy Hill is saying that the gunmen and hostages were inside a hearing room in a National Labor Relations Board office on the building's 18th floor. He said police have been in contact with the gunmen and that the man has been in touch with members of his family. Hill said that authorities had successfully negotiated several things with the gunmen, but he would not elaborate. The gunman was reportedly saying as he ran in with his gun, "I just can't take it anymore." U.S. authorities have charged 4 men with looting bones and body parts from more than 1,000 corpses and selling them for medical transplants. Brooklyn District Attorney Charles Haynes said the scam was like something out of a cheap horror movie. The body of BBC broadcaster Alistair Cook, who died at 95 years of age a few years ago, was among those used in the racket. Weeks before one of its companies sought U.S. approval for its ports deal, the United Arab Emirates contributed $100 million to help victims of Hurricane Katrina. The Bush administration said the money it received from the United Arab Emirates was nearly 4 times as much as it received from all other countries combined. Other countries, including some in the Middle East, also pledged large contributions but have yet to send the money. The White House said the $100 million for storm victims demonstrates the close relationship between the two governments now caught in a firestorm over the potential security risks of state-owned Dubai Ports World running operations at 6+ major U.S. ports. Now, the money, of course, was sent weeks before they sought the approval. Hurricane Katrina was in August. The Port Authority of New York and New Jersey is saying now that they will break the lease of a big container terminal contract at Port Newark to stop a company based in Dubai from taking over part of the operation there. Anthony Cosia, the chairman of this group, the Port Authority, said the company that holds a lease on the terminal through 2030 violated the contract by selling a half interest in it to the Dubai Ports World without seeking the landlord's approval. He said the Port Authority would ask a judge in New Jersey Superior Court to reaffirm its right to end the lease. He said fundamentally, this is a landlord-tenant dispute. It'd be interesting to see how that unfolds. And the DP World Company is now saying that they will delay part of its $6.8 billion takeover of most operations at 6 U.S. ports to give the Bush administration some more time to convince lawmakers that the deal poses no security risks. The surprise announcement relieves some pressure from a standoff between the president and the Republican-controlled Congress, which has threatened to block the deal because of the UAE's purported ties to terrorism. Under the offer coordinated with the White House, Dubai Ports World said it will agree not to exercise control or influence the management over U.S. ports pending further talks with the Bush administration and Congress. It did not indicate how long it will wait for these discussions to take place. The company said it will move forward with other parts of the deal affecting the rest of the world. So maybe our voices have been heard at least for a moment. In a moment, we are going to talk with Jonathan Mosley of the United States Seaports Commission about this, and you will find some startling things that he has to say. All that in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Jonathan Mosley is the executive director of the United States Seaports Commission. This commission is opposed to foreign control of U.S. ports of entry. He's our guest for a moment here on Coast to Coast. Jonathan, thank you for coming on the program. Appreciate it.
Very glad to be here.
Tell me a little bit, first of all, about the U.S. Seaports Commission. What kind of organization is this?
Well, it's a small public policy organization that was primarily focused on the foreign control of ports by CUSCO, the Chinese overseas shipping company, at Long Beach, across the water from Los Angeles. And we've been very interested in wanting to broaden our interest beyond that. We believe that border security after 9/11 in general is a concern. But the opportunity to talk about broader issues just sort of landed on us like a ton of bricks in the last week, I think in part due to some of the efforts of this show in bringing about the most extraordinary week we've had here in politically in Washington, where I am.
Jonathan, you've had an opportunity to sit back over the last week and hear all these arguments, pro and con, why we should have the ports available to these foreign companies, why we should not. What's your thought on all this now that you've been able to look at it and sit back for a little bit?
Well, I think some of the key issues that are being put forward here are the issue that the United States government is going to manage security in these seaports, that it does and it will and continue, so it doesn't matter who runs the ports. We think that's absolutely false, the research we've been able to determine. That the United States Coast Guard, under the Assistant Commandant for Prevention, Thomas Gilmore, he supervises what the private companies do. He sets standards, they develop their own security plans and send them in, and he approves them, and then they occasionally inspect them. But the doing of the security is actually done by the ships, the terminal operators, private companies. And this is the biggest issue of disinformation that I think is dominating official Washington. It's this idea that it doesn't matter because they're all the same people. At the same time, I personally feel, well, if all these American workers are running the seaports now, why do we need foreign employers telling them how to do it? I'm a little baffled. Why, if the same people are going to be doing the work, they have to be controlled by somebody overseas and sending the profits overseas? But I think that the number one issue that I think everybody recognizes is security control, and we're extremely concerned about that, because not only will a foreign government-controlled company be actually doing the security, but even if they're completely innocent, the plans are going to be in Dubai, where somebody could bribe the cleaning lady to go in and
sure,
clean up, get all the copies of how we do security in our seaports. One of the amazing details that has come out here is that Dubai Ports World has not even agreed to keep their records in the United States. So if we wanted to inspect their records, they'll be in Dubai.
Or even in court action, we couldn't really get them.
That's right. And it's just astonishing that any American, much less an American official, could even contemplate such an issue if they're even thinking about security at all. I think they're wannabe, they're pro-business, but they're sort of wannabe pro-business because they're not very smart about it. One of the things that has come out today, we had the Senate Armed Services Committee have a hearing here in Washington, and that was extraordinary. And one of the most startling things that emerged at the very end when Senator Hillary Clinton asked about the last question. We've been told that we had this 30-day review, and don't worry about it because it's been thoroughly looked at. Well, what she asked was, how many meetings were there? Turns out there was one.
One meeting?
There was one meeting of this Committee on the Foreign Investment in the United States, and many of the principals weren't even there. They were no-shows. Of course, there was some bureaucratic, work behind the scenes. So I spent 5 years in the federal government, and 30 days is about how much time it takes to write the report. There's not much investigating that goes on in 30 days. That's just recycling what's already been submitted and already known. Just getting 12 different agencies to coordinate in 30 days is challenging.
You know, Jonathan, if we're going to do this, and I think we should, and let's stop this deal and then get American companies involved, what are we going to do about the situation in the Los Angeles Harbor where Pier J is being run by a communist Chinese company?
Well, I think you state the answer. The problem is it's a very tough politically to do. Even with Dubai Ports World, it is a slap in the face to them, and yet I don't see how we can avoid doing it. I think we're going to have a phase out or something, in which case, say, in the next 5 years, American companies are going to have to buy them out. But it's important to recognize that these are companies controlled by their governments. People said, well, you don't care if the British control these ports. Well, I love the British, but I love America more. I really don't want anybody outside the country running our seaports.
I agree. It should be all or none.
Yeah. But it's really offensive when government agencies, we're supposed to be for privatization and pro-business and everything, but we're not. We're coddling these government agencies to control our ports. But you state the answer, but it's a monumental political challenge to dislodge this status quo.
You know, the Emirates basically, in some cases, speak out of both ends of their mouth, because on one hand, yes, they have supported us militarily, and they have sent $100 million to Katrina victims. I hope the victims got the money. Who knows where it went? But at the same time, people really aren't pushing the fact that the United Arab Emirates was one of three countries in the world at the time to recognize the Taliban as the legitimate government of Afghanistan. The UAE was a key transfer point for illegal shipments of nuclear components to Iran, North Korea, and Libya. The UAE had several of the 9/11 hijackers from there. They transferred money to the hijackers through UAE banks. And also, the UAE was not cooperating at all in the Treasury Department's efforts to track down Osama bin Laden's bank accounts. And I think all that is just, it's criminal.
Well, and that addresses one of the key issues that's being put forward in defense of this deal. I mean, it is being rested on the idea of, A, we did this, you know, wonderfully intensive 30-day review where we had one meeting, and just trust us. And the other is, these are our friends. Of course, a lot in official Washington, especially where the State Department is, we call it Foggy Bottom here historically, are willing to be gullible when it comes to international deals, and I don't know why it is. But the idea that these are the one people in the Middle East that are tiny bit closer to us than the others, therefore we should trust them completely, is a key issue here in the thinking in Washington. And let me add to that one of the things that we had been reporting is that ABC News back in August 2003 shipped a 15-pound cylinder of uranium, depleted uranium, of course, from Jakarta, Indonesia, to test the seaport's security that we're supposed to trust. And, of course, it sailed right through. The key part of seaport security is supposed to be flagging high-risk origins and destinations. Indonesia is a hotbed of Islamic fanaticism in some parts of that country, so it should have been flagged, and yet it went right through. And this is the system we're supposed to trust. What I'm concerned about, too, is we're hearing about this elaborate multi-level defense of our seaports, but it really all comes down to self-reporting in the honor system.
And you know what? We're so concerned, Jonathan, about just the containers. I got to tell you, you know, as I use whatever intuitiveness I might have, I think if we're going to get hit by some kind of nuclear device, it's going to be in a ship that doesn't even come to port. It's going to be a few miles off the ports of the East and West Coast. That ship is going to vaporize and take out part of the city that it's next to.
I think you said it very well, and I think if it's, you know, you're a smart guy, but I think if you can see it, I think people who are enemies can see that too, and we wouldn't know where it came from.
We'll have no idea. You're absolutely right. Well, this entire situation with now the UAE standing back for just a little bit to give time, I think, for a major public relations effort to try to get this thing approved. What's going to happen in the next couple of weeks, Jonathan?
Well, I already sense some of the defenders of, you know, internationalist business and status quo kind of finding their voice here in Washington. And I think what the danger from our point of view is that passions are going to cool. They're going to try to delay. People are going to realize, they're going to play up the issue that, and it's a concern, is that we're going to insult this supposed Middle Eastern ally, and I think eventually they're going to try to grind this to a halt, bring it to some kind of a compromise, much short of what we'd like to see, which is the bill to ban foreign ownership of these seaports.
You know, one of my guests so eloquently put it last night, I don't see the Emirates asking us to run their seaports.
It's exactly right, and I don't know why some... You know, they want to export their products, we want to buy their products, but why do they have to control the means of transportation? If it's a good deal to buy socks from China, why do they have to control the seaport to do it? That just seems like an unnecessary extra. So I don't know, but I do think that the momentum, despite the furor, is going to be huge, and I think that there's going to be a great desire to find some out here in order to allow it to go through and circumvent all the passion. But frankly, I've never seen official Washington publicly so united
On an issue like this.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's since probably 9/11 is the only other example. I think the administration, the bureaucrats, I was one, and I think they are going to go on their momentum. But those who are listening to the people are being screamed at, and they're screaming in turn.
Around Washington, D.C., are you beginning to hear things like America is selling off its assets that were trying to become part of this one world government? Do you hear anything like that out there, Jonathan?
Yes. It's just beginning to dawn on people because, for example, we're going through this idea, well, why do you're only picking on the Arabs. But I think most Americans are thinking, wait a minute, I don't like, the British company. They're shocked to find out that anybody outside America controlled our seaport. So it's a little bit of a backpedaling to figure out just how bad it is, but people are being exposed not just to this one particular deal and the insanity of it, but the fact that they realize they had no idea we were so far down this road already.
I wonder how many people remember U.S. Customs catching the Chinese overseas shipping company that we just talked about, smuggling in 2,000 fully automatic AK-47 assault rifles to give to L.A. street gangs.
Oh, I think...
Real story.
We have been trying to promote that as well, and it seems like it's been completely deaf, like talking to a wall.
Yeah.
You would think that would lead the evening news. I mean, that would be shocking.
Yeah, and then they'd bounce them out from Pier J, but but they're not. They're still in charge of it.
If they had gotten away with it, I mean, imagine the chaos that street gangs armed with Chinese weaponry. The court documents showed they were trying to bring in RPGs, rocket-propelled grenades, all kinds of high military weaponry. I mean, if you wanted to disrupt the homeland while you do something else, that would do it.
See, what I think is afoot here, Jonathan, is a very slow, methodical plan by groups that want to topple our country. And what they're doing is, and I think it's happening right now, they are slowly infiltrating us with arms and weapons and people, whether it's through the borders or just coming straight through. And one day, I don't know when, but one day with all this stuff in place, then they're going to say, I want you to just do whatever you can throughout the United States. And then I think everyone there will pick up their arms and do what they're supposed to be doing.
Could very well happen. And one thing people might consider is we're making it awfully easy for them. That might seem like a stretch until you realize that we're just letting them do it in so many ways. So why not, exploit our weaknesses in that way? There is a theory that, for example, of many possibilities that China may spark a show. Well, actually, what will happen is during the 2008 Olympics, that Taiwan will declare independence because they think that China can't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
While everybody's looking at the Olympics, China is going to say, no, we don't care. And there's going to be an explosion there over that time period. At least one fear people have that could be looming.
I think you're right, too. I think any problems we eventually have with China will be always based on Taiwan. And, that's going to be the big, big problem for us.
But there are experts. I have to find that again. I think the gentleman at the Heritage Foundation points out that in China's mind, the entire South China Sea is China.
Yeah, they think they own it all. It's theirs.
So Taiwan is just one step. They're not going to be satisfied with that.
Once again, your organization, the United States Seaports Commission, says no to any foreign control of U.S. ports, correct?
Yes. Thank you.
All right. How about your website? Do you have it up and running yet?
We had a little trouble with it today. We're working on it. It's USSeaportCommission.com. Org.
You got that. Jonathan, thanks for spending the time for me. I know it's really late out there on the East Coast, but I appreciate it.
You got me excited. Thanks
okay.
a lot.
You got that right. West of the Rockies, I've got open lines now for you, just pure open lines, you and me. West of the Rockies, 800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 800-825-5033. First-time caller line is 818-501-4721. The wild card line, 818-501-4109. We'll have Santana take you to the break. My engineer with his political decision. Europa is what he picks. Strange, isn't it? What a wonderful email from Stephen, Alberta. Let me read it to you. George, I was in a work-related accident in June of 2005. I lost my leg and my neck and back were both broken. Today, I have a prosthetic leg, and my back and neck have healed a great deal. To the physicians and the physiotherapists, I owe a great debt for my physical well-being. For my improved mental health, I owe it to Coast to Coast. In the hospital, the one thing I could look forward to at night, other than a shot of Hydromorph, was your show. Please never stop what you're doing there. I'm a Streamlink member now, a subscriber to After Dark. Coast to Coast has changed the way I look at life in so many positive ways. Thank you. Now, Stephen, thank you. When we come right back, we will continue with open lines on Coast to Coast AM. Well, tomorrow night during the program, we've got open lines, of course, and we're going to get into some strangeness. But the Devil Channeler has made his statement, and we will play it for you tomorrow. I will warn all of you before we play it in the event you don't want to hear it. I listened to it. I've listened to it a couple times now, and it's a scary message, and I don't like it, but we will play it. He was not interviewed. He was set up with a microphone, and he did what he did, and it is very weird. There's an edit in between because there was a lag time, so it is much shorter. You'll hear it as a much shorter version than what actually happened. After the program tomorrow night, it will be posted for free on the coasttocoastam.com website to those of you who didn't have an opportunity to hear it perhaps tomorrow night, or you had to do something, but it will be there if you so choose, if you want to listen to it. Of the frightening part of it, there is a message there that might be worth at least hearing, I think. But again, I do not like what he said. Let's go to the phones. We'll pick it up now by going to East of the Rockies. Where might you be? Hi there. Somewhere. Hello. Goodbye. I hear breathing. I hear heavy breathing. First time caller line. You're on the air. Hi there.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead, sir. Where are you calling from?
I am from Cincinnati, Ohio.
Well, welcome to the show, and what's on your mind?
Well, I wanted to call you, Mr. Norrie. Is it okay to call you George, by the way?
You may call me George. You may call me Mr. Norrie, but you don't have to call me Johnston.
I'm familiar with that joke, actually. I'm in Cincinnati, Ohio, listening on 55 KRC. My
sure.
accent may sound a little funny. I am originally from Denmark.
Oh, are you? Okay.
Indeed I am. A trivly dot rakas, which means nice to meet you where I'm from.
I hope that's what it means.
It's exactly what it means. I was calling actually because before I say what I wanted to say, I do want to say I enjoy your program very much, particularly the topics you have on the supernatural. Very much enjoy that.
Well, many will come, too. Thank you.
Appreciate that. I have been in America for about 15 years. I'm a U.S. citizen here. I love this country immensely, very much so. However, I have dual citizenship. I'm still a Danish citizen. The reason I called was over the last week, very, very good shows you've had on about the topic of the illustrations we've had back home in our newspapers. Somehow, I realize there's not a lot of Danish people living in America. I wanted to weigh in with a Danish perspective.
All right, sure.
The cartoons, of course, are in good or bad taste, depending on yours. I do recall from what you said, you know, you don't want to scold, as you Americans say, the newspaper for publishing them, but perhaps the timing may have been a bit off.
Right, and I would not have run them. If I were running that newspaper, There's big difference between freedom of speech, and the freedom of speech is the right to do it. If they wanted to do it, they have every reason to. But if I were running that paper, I would not have done it.
Sure. And actually, I agree with you, as well as a great deal of citizens back in my country of origin. Our thing, of course, needless to say, we hate to see any violence erupt over anything. We haven't had a conflict in a great number of years. We do have troops in Iraq, and for good or bad, they are there. I hope to see them all come home very soon to their families. The thing that I really wanted to get across is that for the Islamic world, and I'm sure all people of good intelligence realize, Scandinavian folks, Danish, Norwegians, Swedes, we have nothing against Muslims or Islam. Please don't look down on our entire country for some bad taste. I also believe in protecting the right. We have free press in those countries, much as we have here. Just an issue of it is their right to do it. Of course, they have a right to disagree. We just ask, please stop burning our buildings down.
What's happening now, Steve, as you know, is this tremendous incitement of people.
Yes.
And they know how to push those buttons.
Of course.
And they're doing it because they can't fight back militarily. So this is the only way they can do it. And unfortunately, they're creating havoc throughout the entire region. I mean, Iraq, for example, I think is on the brink of a civil war now over the explosion of the dome on that mosque.
And, I agree.
You know, these things couldn't have come up at the worst possible times for people.
Oh, I agree. And as I said, I just wanted to weigh in on it. And, of course, I can't speak for everyone in Denmark or, for that matter, anywhere else or here. I do love America. I love freedom. I love liberty. And I love the show that you do.
Well, okay. So, do you have programs like this there?
Actually, we can get you on the web there. I do know friends. I've told about you. I have several friends back home, Lindo and Burfez. Both of them are quite fascinated by the supernatural. And actually, you did a show on death metal and black metal about a year ago, music. And a lot of that, I don't know if you recall what I'm talking about, a lot of that originates in the country where I'm from.
Yes, that's true.
And it's all in good nature to us. We don't take anything all too seriously. I'm not even all that spiritually inclined, but we're quite fascinated by supernatural things. Just the topic of it itself is very interesting. And I love your show. And I just wanted to weigh in.
All right. Well,
all of those abroad who are listening, troops and otherwise, God bless you all. We hope you come home very soon. And I wish to see peace come very soon everywhere.
All right. Well said, my friend. Thank you. Appreciate you being on the program. Next up, let's go west of the Rockies. You are on the air. Hi there.
Hi, George. This is Bill in California.
Hi,
how you
Bill.
Doing?
Doing great. Whereabouts in CA are you?
Right in the Central Valley, just north of Fresno.
Okay, sure.
Yeah, after that interview with that gentleman on our port, well, I couldn't get on the phone and dial fast enough. You really hit it on the head, and I hope you replay that interview with him sometime in the near future. You guys pretty much hit it on the head, and there's a lot of suspicion going around about why they want them to start running our port. And where a lot of people need to start looking at is, look how many gas stations that they're owning now throughout the United States. What's to say that they don't start an embargo on our own country saying, hey, we own these gas stations now, you guys aren't getting anything. And I could see it we're slowly giving our country away.
Oh, we're in little tiny pieces.
Yeah, I spent 8 years in the Marine Corps, and it was in the 80s under Reagan, and he was the best thing the military had back then. And, they taught us in our line of work of security forces for embassies and everything, they instilled and ingrained in your mind a sense of awareness. And people that, there might be a few Marines out there that are listening that I've either trained or trained with, that we were taught a color code, and it was a few different colors. It consisted of white, yellow, orange, red, and black. And the white color code is somebody that's totally oblivious to what's going on around
them. That's right. People in a daze, for example.
Right. And we call that the victim color because when something happens, they're not going to know what to do or anything like that.
That is true.
Right. And then if you're in the next step, which is a yellow, I'll try to make it quick for you. A yellow is a color code of caution. You're aware of your surroundings. You see things that's going on. You're not turning a blind eye. You're being really aware. And the next step is color code orange, and that's when you see something that's going to happen. You get that intuition, like, this doesn't look right, something's going to happen, And that's when you start making your plan.
See, and that's where I think a lot of us now feel. I think we're feeling this. And, of course, as you know, color black means you're in mortal danger. And that's when you really got to do your thing.
Right. That's when you're either going to react or be deactivated, so we speak.
You got that right. All right. Thanks, Marine.
Okay, take it easy.
Appreciate it. And, of course, you were talking about the country that owns the gas stations in this country, 14,000 of them owned by Venezuela. But Chavez is a strange, cagey guy. I mean, he's given his own people fuel for pennies on the gallon. He's helped out a couple major states along the eastern coast of the United States with 40% discounts of fuel oil in anticipation of a cold winter. You know, he knows exactly how to do it, how to handle it. He seems to be a PR master out there. We need to learn stuff like that. It seems like everything that we touch, where it's a public relations debacle, isn't it? Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hi there.
Yes, this is Mike calling out of Dallas. I'm 570 KLIF.
How are you?
Good, good. How are you doing?
Good.
You're doing an excellent job, having taken over from, partially from Art Bell, and I suppose in the future.
Well, I've never taken over, just merely doing my thing.
Add to it, yeah. I had a quick comment and a couple of questions that I'll brief to you. My comment was in regard to religion and spirituality. A couple of years ago, I was sitting in a well-known bookstore and overheard a conversation of what seemed to be a Bible study. I don't know which particular denomination it would have been, but the point being, I was witness to afterward, and I think that whether someone is a zealot or whether someone might not be a zealot, I think it's maybe a wise word for Coast Callers to hear that, in my humble opinion, I think that God hears all righteous people, regardless of religion or denomination within.
I think he also hears all non-righteous people, too, don't you? He hears everybody.
Unfortunately, I think that's also true.
Yeah.
There's positive and negative energy. The couple of questions that I had are as follows. I would like to know when you're going to have another clairvoyant or psychic or medium, speaking of end times, on the show.
Probably in the not-too-distant future, much sooner than you probably would guess. So it's coming up.
Right. And if you could refresh me, I remember listening several months ago, possibly even up to a year ago, and you made a brief comment about something I found fascinating, about a friend of yours was visiting, I believe, with George Bush Jr. on the lawn of either Martha's Vineyard or some other vacation spot.
No. What was happening was a friend of mine who runs a valet company for a major hotel here in Beverly Hills, George Bush's friend drove in, came out of a limousine, and they started talking, and that's where you're headed. And they were talking about what the friend and the president were talking about with Iraq. And because it was a hearsay comment, I didn't repeat it on this program, but it was pretty derogatory. The president was somewhat humorous in his remarks, and I know the valet person was not impressed, and quite frankly, I don't think the friend of the president was either. He was somewhat taken by shock over the cavalier comment, and I'm pretty sure that's where you were headed.
I think it was. Something to the effect of he feels like he has sort of a grasp in the evolution of where we are as a nation.
Well, no, I never said what he said. Don't trick me. Hey, thanks. Appreciate you being part of the program. Next up, let's go to our first-time caller line. You're on the air. Where are you calling from? Hi there.
Hi, this is Kathy. I'm from L.A.
Hello, first time. Hi, Kathy.
Yeah.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I wanted to call and agree with you about selling off the ports, and especially with the Chinese. I don't think people realize how much security is overseas versus the amount of security that we have here in the United States. The security is much stiffer when you travel outside of the country. And also the fact that we've shipped off so many of our high-tech and commercial jobs that it's incredibly frustrating to see Everything, the only thing that we have anymore is Walmart and service positions, it seems like.
Oh, I know, I know. I was reading on the website today that a major company is offering buyouts to some of its employees already. I mean, it's just, it's happening all over the place.
And it's nice that finally somebody, the port thing maybe will make wake up the American public so that they realize that their country isn't anymore.
Well, and I think the other thing, too, is I think, you know, when the... You know, this administration continues to talk about how friendly the United Arab Emirates are and that we don't want to risk that, especially their military. Hey, wait a minute. Let me tell you something. The emirs who are running the seven federations that make up the United Arab Emirates are all making megabucks, billions. As a matter of fact, the Maktoum family, the one in Dubai, they're the ones that are buying on a 100% leveraged buyout. They've got banks coming up with $6.5 billion just because of the creditworthiness of Dubai. They're lending them the money. Look, we protect those seven emirates, and they're not going to stop, no matter, even if this deal is quashed, and I hope it is, they're not going to stop this relationship with the United States because they want to stay in power. They want their families to stay in power. They want to continue to get the billions of dollars, primarily from oil. Not all the Emirates are making money off of oil. There are some that don't even have oil. But they want us to protect them, and that's why they're friends with us. They want to stay in power. And the other thing that I said yesterday, which is so bizarre, and you think about this for a moment, you've got these crazed terrorists running around all over the Middle East, blowing up trains and subways and everything else. The United Arab Emirates are as close to a Western democracy in terms of lifestyle, not in terms of rulers, but in terms of lifestyle of any area on the planet. And not one major terrorist attack there. Not one. Not one that I've heard of. Why is that? My reason for that is, and it's strictly a guess, is that those groups are being paid off by the Emirates to simply say, leave us alone. So it's a double-edged sword out there. Let's go to our East of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there. Hello.
Hi, George.
Yes, sir. Hi.
Yeah, John in New Jersey. I'm driving along Interstate 80 in my car.
One of the big ports out your way.
Well, I'm heading toward Pennsylvania.
Okay, what's going on?
Pardon me?
What's up?
I wanted to tell you about nightmares that I had when I was a kid.
You still remember them?
Well, it took me, I'll never forget them. I had them up until I was about 12 years old. I don't know when they started, but I was very young, maybe 4 or 5.
Was it the same one?
It was the same one over and over again.
What happened to you?
And the nightmare would be this incredibly disgusting, horrible, dark, wet, feeling like I was being squeezed through a bottle.
Like a tomato?
Well,
that Hunt's commercial. Boom.
When I was 35, I had my first son, and that's when I gave childbirth a great deal of thought. And that's when it dawned on me. I was having nightmares about being born.
That's weird.
It is weird. I'm absolutely convinced that's what my nightmares were about.
See, now when you think of it, it's really not a nightmare anyway, is it? It wasn't all that bad.
It scared the heck out of me because I didn't know what it was, but it had to be a traumatic experience for me for it to stick in my subconscious for that long.
Yeah, absolutely. You probably had some childhood recollection of yourself being born. That's incredible.
Yeah, no, I wanted to call you last week, and I couldn't get through. There was a guy on yet. I remembered things back when he was 2 years old.
Yeah, we had a caller do that. I'd love to open up a line for people to just go back to tell us about the earliest point of their memory. That
well,
would be
George,
strange.
Thanks for taking the call. You're the third person I told. First person was a psychologist. The second person was a total stranger.
And now you just told about 5 million other people. You know that.
Yeah, that's all right. Maybe I'll start a trend.
You got that right. All right. Well, in a moment, we're going to continue with our really a couple two-parter of just what's going on this planet and in this country. A couple of experts talking about what really happened in their case on 9/11, what they believe. And I think you're going to find it to be very compelling. So stick with us tomorrow night on Coast to Coast. It's our Friday into Saturday night open lines. Actually, we're going to sit back and have some fun and tell some spooky stories and just chill. But we'll be back.